Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
This is another episode about Afghanistan, but it's more abstract and less specific about the actual details of the war. It discusses the systems at play within human populations and the migration patterns that may shape the region into the future. The future of Afghanistan is an open question on self-determination. The U.S. has been meddling in Afghanistan for at least 40 years. A foreign occupation is never a prerequisite to self-determination, right?
No. The occupation of Afghanistan or any country with the idea that somehow you're going to change the fabric of that country into what you want that country to be is absolutely psychopathic in nature. Because the only way that it can happen is through colonization. That's the only way it can change. Is through brute force colonization, in which you impose your actual social constructs on that nation by displacing the locals. That's the only way you can do it. So beyond that, really, what's the point of the occupying force then? What did the U.S. really think was going to happen here?
So if the U.S. doesn't do this colonization concept, which I think we both agree they didn't.
No.
They just fucked around for 20 years, basically.
They put outposts in, and it didn't matter with the U.S. military. There's no real thing.
They did everything short of colonizing while trying to impose their morality and their system of government on an entire country that was completely unreceptive to them even being there. And this is just like wild from a system point of view of how are you going to win the hearts and minds of the people? Like, you either have to convince them through some sort of propaganda, which the U.S. is obviously capable of doing. Whether they did it in Afghanistan or not, I have no idea because I don't live in Afghanistan and I don't know what the messaging of the local population was. You always hear about, well, we hired translators to try and go in and talk to the, you know, the elders about this, 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 and this, and we were going to try and get them to our side. And like, there's no evidence of any of that working. It's arguably the less harsh alternative to colonialism, but it didn't work. And it just resulted in them fucking around for 20 years with absolutely no tangible results. And it's this very warped American-centric mindset of we are right. And if we just say we're right enough to the right people, then we're right. And that is just not how appealing to somebody's like innate desire to have self-determination works at all. And you saw in Afghanistan that there was effectively an assertion of self-determination by telling the U.S. to fuck off. And this is empirically observable because when the U.S. withdrew, the entire country, through basically no bloodshed, determined that the Taliban were sufficient. There was no open rebellion against the Taliban. The Afghan National Army, if they wanted to oppose the Taliban, nobody in the army decided it was worth risking their life to oppose the Taliban. The U.S. failed to win the hearts and minds. Their ability or intent to impose their morality completely failed. And at the end of the day, the people of Afghanistan exercised self-determination.
And the people of Afghanistan who received U.S. propaganda, and this is real, were told that they should be hardline Muslim, that they should be part of the Taliban, the Mujahideen, that they're told that they should be fighting against the Soviets. So if you have an entire generation of people who were taught that they should be soldiers and be people that are part of the, you know, freedom fighters, right? The rebels in terms of Star Wars, right? The true patriots in the terms of the United States as a terrorist organization in the 1700s, right? If you think about it from those terms and ideas, like, you're not going to win the hearts and minds of the people that you taught should be insurgents. There's just, how do you do that? And then how do you know who to trust? Because you can't trust the U.S. You can't trust the Afghan soldiers, because you don't know who's reporting back to the Taliban. There's just like no way to do it. Like, quite literally, there's no way to have won this war.
The U.S. literally published children's books to children in Afghanistan. I think they minted 15 million of these books, and the current population of Afghanistan is roughly 30 million right now, in which the moral of the story is to wage like religious jihad against the like foreign invaders. So the U.S. is like publishing books that are telling the local population to do literally what they're doing. And then the U.S. is like, oh my God, why didn't this work? How are we unsuccessful?
Here's a math problem, right? I think it goes something like this. Like, there are 3,000 enemy combatants and you and your group kill 128 of them. What percentage of the enemies did you kill? fourth grade math problem. Go.
Well, it's 128 divided by 3,000.
Is that how it works? Okay.
So it's a little over 4%.
Think about it from a propaganda point of view. If all you're taught when you're growing up is to spend and buy money and that consumerism is good, then you're a kid in the United States and you believe that freedom is all about consumerism. If you're only taught that you should be shooting other people who don't believe what you believe, then you're a right-wing Christian in the United States and or you're part of the Taliban in Afghanistan. Because those are the same indoctrine and same ideologies that are pushed everywhere. That's why you can't have self-determination. So really, self-determination in Afghanistan is the tribes are there to essentially figure it out for themselves. That's what self-determination is.
These tribes, as backwards as they may be, they might have weird, archaic, theocratic...
To us. To modern U.S. like shit lips.
Their beliefs are backwards, in air quotes, whatever that means. And the point of this framing is, who decides what is right or wrong from the context of self-determination? The people in a given unit decide what is right from the perspective of self-determination. That is the point. I think in general, there's a line where if you have a group of people that are like openly advocating for genocide, like, yes, that's a problem.
Yes, that's called fascism. Yeah. I mean,
but if one of your beliefs is like you drive on the left side of the road, like that's not worthy of a 20-year ground invasion. Right. And those are extreme examples, but there's some gray area and some very clear delineation here of groups of people should be allowed to self-determine. Like that's the entire abstract concept of government. We want that in the United States. And I think generally we want that everywhere. That doesn't mean that there's not going to be some pockets of, I'm going to say, unusual beliefs that maybe are undesirable to others, but I think so long as they don't cross whatever that line is, we shouldn't interfere. And I think that's where the U.S. fucked up. But they also were led to interfere because the in-group, the self-determined group of Al-Qaeda, did cross the threshold and, you know, did 9/11 and whatever. But that didn't happen in a vacuum either, where Al-Qaeda was largely motivated by the U.S.'s actions at destabilizing their country for 20, 30 years. I guess it would have been 20-ish years at the time of 9/11 since 1979. So meddling in a foreign country and attempting to enforce your own morality against the self-determined will of the people is never going to be a winning formula.
We created and supported a theocratic individual in Osama bin Laden, right? That's what the CIA did. Trained, taught how to destabilize the world, and pretended to be his friend. But being that the U.S. is imperial and wants to control other nations through proxy wars, they did things like, and this is an open letter to America, when he says things like, you know, you support the death of Muslims worldwide. You created a scenario where this person is ideologically so far removed from the mainstream that when you push a little bit too hard on this individual, they have the ability to react because you gave them the freedom to grow the way they wanted to grow. And I guess this goes back to self-determination. Without the meddling of the United States, would there have been self-determination?
So this concept of self-determination also overlaps with radicalization, where Afghanistan, over its 40-year period, has effectively asserted its ability to self-determine. These various warlords and tribes and factionalized units are self-determined. They believe what they believe and they act on it. Al-Qaeda was an example of this. They had so much ability to self-determine that they became radicalized. And this is perhaps the word for when you cross over between this gray area and you start having non-mainstream beliefs. But these beliefs and this radicalization is typically caused by something. And it was caused by the United States trying to impose imperialism. Al-Qaeda is a direct offshoot of the U.S.'s involvement in the Afghan war with the Soviet Union and some of the following actions from Pakistan creating the Taliban to form a government in the early 90s. It's all a direct causality of the U.S. And to then have the U.S. wage this 20-year war in Afghanistan and say, well, we're shocked that Afghanistan would self-determine and we don't understand why they became radicalized. It's like one leads to the other. And until you create a venue by which the Afghanistan people can express their desire for self-determination in some meaningful and productive way, both to themselves and the global world, they're going to continue to radicalize against foreign interests. That is their number one propaganda-derived baseline concept for self-determination is we oppose the infidels, number one.
Imperialism cannot work without colonization, right? We talk about that. Self-determination gets to be more and more extreme as you try to impose something radical against the tribe.
And radical is a relative concept because it's perceived from whoever is viewing the message.
It's no different than the mask fight right now. There are individuals who do not believe they should wear a mask. And the harder you push to make them wear a mask, to quote-unquote take away their freedom and change the way their tribe is, it take away their ability to have the freedom to meet, right? Because a lot of this is derived from the fact that they can't do what they want. They don't have the liberty to do what they want. They don't have the freedom to go shopping or go to church or, I guess, cough on poor people. Force people to go to work, get to make you Chipotle subs, give you the shits from eating Mexican food at a fast food joint that has a bell in the name. Again, what's radical is, you know, one side says, why would you wear a mask? The other side says, why won't you wear a mask? Right. And those two fight primarily because it's extreme. And that's one of those divisions. It's so simple. It's as simple as that. So if you try to come in and say that women no longer have to wear religious garb, like they try doing in France, other places, you end up with extremism. If you're going to be so far as to disrespect someone's God, you're going to end up with extremism. That's what happened, right? If you are only targeting children or brown people over the age of 8, you're going to make extremists out of those that survived. If you are in Palestine and you are swapping children with your brother in places, other cities, because you want to make sure some of your descendants live after Israel keeps bombing you, you will make radical individuals. So the real question now is, if you don't want to create radicalism, how do you actually go about merging your ideologies that you want with that region with the local tribes? And it all comes down to is, are you meeting the needs of the people? And can you demonstrate that the way you're meeting the needs of the people is better than what they currently have?
So it's literally an appeal to their material condition.
It's literally appeal to the material conditions. Do you need clean water? We'll create a water station for you and we'll help you maintain it. Not only will we help you maintain it, we'll train you on how to maintain it and we'll teach you how to get and procure more objects and we'll make sure we ship you more filters every month, which they didn't do in Flint, by the way.
Thanks, Obama.
Thanks, Obama. Thanks, Trump. Thanks, Biden.
You used the Flint example, but it's literally the same thing in Afghanistan.
Literally.
In Flint, there is a profit motive to not take care of the water. In Afghanistan, there's also a profit motive, and this relates to neoliberalism and the neoconservatism we talked about in the previous episode, where the profit motive of capitalism overrides this idea of addressing material conditions. Because if I do something that is profitable onto somebody else, it doesn't mean it helps their material condition. They don't give a shit.
No.
If I come in and I'm like, you know what I did, guys? I put in a Chipotle. And people are like, great, we don't have toilets. Where are we going to shit it out? So an actual example of this is, we understand that Afghanistan is very mountainous. And we wanted to take advantage of that mountainousness. And we built an observatory on one of the highest mountains in Afghanistan. And we really think this is going to be beneficial to the advancement of planetary interests to the whole globe. And the tribe looking around is like, who the fuck cares? I need water. Like, I need food. Like, I don't give a fuck.
This metal would be really nice for my roof.
And an even better example to fit the capitalism thing might be, well, we created a mine so that you can all go work at the mine.
And make money.
Oh, great. So I don't have any fucking food. And now I have to spend 12 hours a day inhaling like toxic chemicals. Thank you so much, America. I really appreciate it.
And you can't spend the money because what are you going to do with that money, right?
There's not a Walmart to go consume things.
The infrastructure doesn't exist there. The only real way for this to have worked is to pick an edge of the country and work the other way, building infrastructure or ringing it around the capital cities, which is always a danger because then it's too centralized. But you pick the top four cities and you make schools, you rent electricity, you build a power plant. Fuck, we could have built so many power plants for $1 trillion. The whole fucking everything could have been a coal plant. It didn't matter. How many solar panels you could have put in that desert?
You had 20 years and $2 trillion. You could have industrialized an entire country.
China did.
And that's probably what China's going to do with Afghanistan now.
So they're doing it in Africa. They're building infrastructure. They're putting things in place. They're imposing their will, not because they're imperialists, but because they're trying to improve the conditions of the individuals in that area so that it's mutually beneficial. Now, at the end of the day, does getting heavy metals and minerals out of Africa, is that beneficial to China? It is. But they also have a moral responsibility within their own culture to at least increase the livelihood of the individuals that they're impacting. It may not seem like it because you don't understand what poverty is, But there's like a lot of people in the United States that live on less than $2 a day that you don't see because they're part of the hidden, you know, society.
We've talked a lot about self-determination in Afghanistan, but the U.S. largely doesn't have self-determination. It's all city-states.
Yep.
And individuals don't really have a say in most policy. So we're going to use the mask example again. And if the U.S. had actual self-determination that played out through some sort of direct democracy in some reasonable time frame, I think you would see something like, let's put all of the people that don't want to wear masks and think COVID is imaginary in an area and allow them to self-determine.
Yep.
They want to incur that risk, fine. But that doesn't necessarily mean that others want to. So this is an example of self-determination where these two groups have self-determined that one group wants to think COVID is imaginary and the other group wants to social distance and wear their mask or not wear their mask so long as there's brunch. However you want to frame it. That hasn't happened in the U.S.
No, because there's no way for someone to actually do that, right? Because you're so bound to your house, your job, where you live, your family, your school. You can't self-determine. The material conditions in the United States are bound to money. So you could not form a tribe that was money-free because there's no way to have that policy set up. Because every part of your life is derived from money, like your house, your food, your water, who takes care of your trash, your car, right? Schools, like all of it. It's all money driven. Like you could not be self-determined. You could not say, I'm going to go out and make a commune because they'd find a way to take it from you because of money.
And that might be why the U.S. had such difficulty with understanding how these tribes in Afghanistan operate because it's not exploitation driven or money driven. They're like autonomous units of almost efficiency. I don't have any grand academic awareness of how these tribes are set up, but they're certainly not wasting resources for the sake of enriching the rich guy in the tribe. That's not how any of this works. There's certainly power structures within these tribes that are perhaps exploitive, but they're not exploitive in the sense of capitalism.
No, we see this in other areas and countries in which the tribalism has local warlords. They'll call them warlords, but really just the tribal military group, which is the way the world used to be. It's no different than the militias in the 1700s. Like, no different. The Minutemen are basically tribal warlords that were all grouped around, you know,
Massachusetts.
Patriotism, Massachusetts, right? Like it's no different, right? And some of the Sharia law is no different than burning witches at the stake or Joseph Smith saying that he's got golden tablets and lying to his wife about God. Like it's no different. It's no different than the Christian scientists saying that you have cancer and dying because you're within sin. I mean, it's insane beliefs that are still practiced in industrialized nations nowadays. I mean, it's what drove the Third Reich. Right. The idea that if they got rid of the bad parts of society, they could transcend. Literal cult belief system. It's not like we ourselves have transcended to a spot in the industrialized world in which religion and religious law and belief systems like astrology don't exist. In the self-determination problem that the U.S. wanted to solve still exists. It will never be solved because now you've also radicalized an entire generation of kids. Thanks for blowing up my boss, Obama.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.